Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Due to the global outbreak of the coronavirus, the Voice of America is taking every necessary precaution to safeguard its employees, so our broadcast will look a little different today and in the near future as we reduce our staffing at VOA headquarters here in Washington. We appreciate your staying with us on Straight Talk Africa.
Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Coming to you from my home in Arlington, Virginia, a suburb of Washington, D.C. I am Shaka Sali. And today, we'll talk about elections in the Ivory Coast, Tanzania, and Guinea. Joining us are two distinguished guests, Chipo Dendere, Assistant Professor for Africana Studies at Wellesley College in Massachusetts. And joining us from New York is David Monda, Professor at the City University of New York. Chipo and David, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on this special edition of Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Now, Chipo, being the first time that you are coming on the show, talk to us about your impression of elections in general on the African continent. When you look at the democratic trajectory, what is your impression so far?
I think it's easy to feel dejected and to think that the democracy project is suffering. But over the years, I think what we've seen is that there are more elections across the continent, that there is more demand for space from different groups, particularly the young people. We haven't seen as much turnover as we would like. So we continue to see, you know, the same political parties winning elections, the same candidates winning. And so that's definitely a detriment and a concern. But I do think that especially the young people, because the continent is very young, they are creating opportunities for themselves and they continue to demand change and to demand space. So that's hopeful. That gives me a sense of, okay, if people keep at it, then democracy is not nearly in as much danger as one might think. I think the problem comes when people say, you know what, we're going to give up. We're going to stop fighting for our rights. We're going to stop fighting for what we believe in. But as long as people have the energy and the will to keep fighting, then democracy has a chance. But of course, with the three elections that we're here to discuss, there is definitely some concern that there's, you know, the increased use of violence in the Tanzanian election, the fact that we've got presidents seeking extra terms and trying to protect themselves to entrench authoritarianism. Those are all issues that are taking the continent back. Even as some countries are making progress, very soon we'll be looking at the election in Ghana. But then you have these examples of taking us backward, especially the recent election in Tanzania. I had not anticipated that level of regression.
What about you, David?
I think I would be a little more cautious because I think we've seen some very alarming signs in terms of democratic backsliding and deconsolidation. And specifically in relation to the fact that, Shaka, we have a lot of these elections, which are really not elections, they are selections. And they are choreographed around this very cheeky framework of people voting. It appears that there's some form of ballot counting, But the result is a foregone conclusion. Secondly, the opposition parties are harassed, they are intimidated, opposition candidates are assassinated or severely injured, like what happened with Tindi Lissu in Tanzania. And we also have the third element, Shaka, of leaders basically extending their terms in office, which used to happen during the Cold War, but during that era, leaders just used to do it anyway because they could play the East off against the West. In the modern day, in 2020, the new African strongman is manipulating the constitution in a way that it extends their rule of power, even though it appears on paper that there are elections. But this, is, again, is another selection. And we see this in terms of addition of time under constitutions in Ivory Coast and in Guinea. But we also see it in terms of Tanzania, and specifically in terms of the authoritarian nature of the Magufuli regime, that he's so consolidated and concentrated power within himself and within the Chama cha Mapinduzi, that now there's even fear that in another 5 years, Magufuli could decide to amend the constitution the way Conde has done and the way Ouattara has done in Ivory Coast to extend his term in Tanzania. So I am extremely cautious and concerned about the fate of democracy on the continent, in particular context in these three countries.
Monda, you raise a very interesting question. You refer to the individuals who happen to be at the top of the political harem in their countries as leaders, and yet we all know, frankly, that for you to be a leader, you have to be in a position where you must consult your people before making very important decisions that affect them. Is it possible that perhaps we are using a wrong name for people that would otherwise be referred to as rulers? And I'm talking about especially those individuals that engage in the business of the shifting of the political constitutional goalposts, simply, in fact, for political and perhaps personal reasons rather than national reasons.
Yes, I think you could call them rulers, but specifically in relation to the context of how they rule. When we think of leaders, we think of individuals having a following, and actually the idea that you actually follow a legitimate constitutional path. So I guess you could call them rulers in the context that the mandate from the electorate is not certain. And there's a lot of repression and fear and intimidation, not only of the opposition, but also of the electorate. And we see this in Guinea. We see this in Ivory Coast, and unfortunately also we see this in Tanzania. So yes, I guess you could also call them rulers in this context.
Chipo, you said a while ago that you seem to be impressed with the democratic trajectory in the sense that at least as far as the politics on the African continent are concerned, we do regularly conduct what some pundits refer to as regular elections, as opposed to quality elections. Are you satisfied with the idea of merely conducting regular elections after every 5 years? Or should we perhaps be looking, frankly, at serious elections that are, in fact, qualitative types of, you know, elections that at the end of the day produce a result that is a reflection of the will of the people, but not really a result that is the will of the individual who announces the results or the will of the individuals who count the votes?
So I think for me, there are a number of things that are happening. And I like what David called, that they're not elections, they're selections. But I think we can break it all down to different aspects, right? So they are the rulers slash leaders and their they are the candidates, whether opposition or ruling party, they are the electoral commissions, then they are the people. So for me, I think when I think about democracy really on the continent, my focus is always on, well, not always, but I think it's important to see what's happening with the people, right? So what we're having on the continent is that we've seen, you know, this shift from the Cold War where now the leaders are playing jiu-jitsu, if you will, with the constitutions, trying to use the rule of law to consolidate authoritarianism. So that's one thing that's happening, which David alluded to. But at the same time, we've got real grassroots movements that are happening on the level of the people, right? So the reason why we know what's happening in Tanzania, what's happening in Ivory Coast, what's happening in Guinea-Bissau, what's happening in Zimbabwe right now has to do with civil society and the citizens. And so for me, that's where I see a lot of opportunity. Granted that the people are facing challenges where people, you know, the governments are using the military or the police to restrict people. But even within that, we continue to see civil society pushing and making space for themselves. Now, the other alternative would be to say, well, elections are not free and fair. Elections are rigged in favor of the leaders. The leaders are going to continue manipulating, and we stop having elections altogether. But if we do that, I think we miss opportunities that are there. So once in a while, we find that when civil society is engaged, when citizens are engaged, even under the most difficult circumstances, the people can prevail. And so for me, that's what I like to see. I mean, we saw in Sudan just the last year, we saw the people's movement push for change. Now, we can debate all day long on whether or not that was good change. But even in Zimbabwe, which is where I'm from, and we've continued to see challenges, what we know now is that because people's voices are continuing to express themselves, even if the regime tries to restrict people, they can't silence everybody. And that's what's happening in Tanzania right now, that the regime is trying to silence the opposition, but they were forced to release because people spoke out. And so when I think about democracy, I'm often thinking about the individual citizens. How are they viewing the situation and how are they responding to the situation? Then, of course, ideally, we want a democracy that is substantive, where elections are peaceful, where the results are reflective of the people's will. But I always say this about democracy and elections, that inherently democracy is a very violent process, whether we agree with that or not, right? We are asking people who've been saying really nasty things about each other to have a civil form of engagement. And ideally, this process of the ballot should diminish some of that nastiness that's embedded in the competition of politics. But on the continent, you know, we have a long way to go in that, because, you know, part of it is that I think our leaders, not just the ones at the top, but the MPs and the people that are involved in the electoral processes, they are too dependent on those positions. They're afraid to leave. They're afraid of what becomes of themselves when they're no longer tied to those positions. So I think part of the democracy project has to also be about thinking about the economy in the broader sense. Would it make a difference on the continent if we had more people in the middle class, if we had people that are more comfortable financially? Would that change the type of person that runs for office, who can risk their lives to enter politics? Would it change the way that the average citizen is going to engage with politics? So I think there's a lot to say, but I still remain optimistic, because I think when we think about the average person, right, the people are the reason why we're having these conversations, because they're going out, they're participating, they aren't giving up, even though they should, because this process has been very difficult and very brutal for many people, but people aren't giving up.
By the way, Chipo, you mentioned Guinea-Bissau. We are, in fact, looking at Guinea-Conakry, the country that belonged to the great man, the late Sekou Touré.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Now, talk to me about the issue of democracy. democracy is defined, at least here in the West, by what I first learned in primary six, Kigezi High School in southwestern Uganda, in Kabale, that according to Abraham Lincoln, democracy is a government of the people, by the people, for the people. How do you respond to some people who say that the kind of democracy we are experiencing across most of Africa, not in every African country, but across most of it, is, in their words, not mine, a government of some people, by some people, for some people?
And they're not wrong. I think there are very few countries where the average person might feel that the government represents them, might feel that the government is working for them. I know, you know, my colleague here is from Kenya, and I've been following the conversations in the Kenyan parliament, where sometimes people feel that people enter politics so that they can line their pockets. And I think this is a theme that would reverberate across the continent, where people feel that the politicians enter so that they can make themselves rich, and so the government becomes just for a small sect. But, you know, I think they are, and part of that reason really is because we have so much poverty across the continent, where the average person is just focused on their everyday existence. And so politics feels very removed from them. And so we would not want in any way to undermine that truth. But I still go back to saying that even though that is the case, even though some politicians might feel that they own the government, they own the country and everything that's within it, I think it's important for us as scholars of democracy to constantly remind people that these countries are in fact theirs, and that this democracy is in fact for the people, and that it belongs to the people. And it's important that we remind people as a way of empowering them and saying, look, it doesn't matter that you feel, oh, you know, I am not wealthy enough to be engaged, but we must continue to claim our stake. And for me, I think that's the message that I think is really important, that we must continue to claim our stake. I see in Uganda, Bobi Wine was arrested recently. And one of the things that he said, or maybe it was somebody using his account when they came out, was that we don't stop claiming what belongs to the people because a few people have made it their own. We must not stop. Because one of the things that, you know, I think Africans haven't pushed our politicians to do is to say, look, our continent remains one of the wealthiest continents on earth when we think about our natural resources. And yet when it comes to election time, we are not pushing our candidates to be open in how they will redistribute resources, you know? And so we sit back during election time and we let these people make policies and promises that are not reflective of the will of the people, but we must continue to push them. It would be easy, I think, for us to sit here and say, oh, you know, democracy has failed in Africa, because you see that too. You see people saying that the type of Western democracy that has existed has no place in the African context. And my pushback on that is, well, what form of government then would be ideal for Africa? And I haven't seen an answer to that that's very satisfactory. If not democracy, then what?
Very interesting. David, you know as well as I do that some democratically challenged rulers on the continent sometimes actually go to the extent of saying democracy is an alien ideology, that it is something that belongs to the Mzungu. Even though, frankly, when you look at democracy, it essentially reflects values that you would actually regard as universal. When you talk about justice, when you talk about fairness, when you talk about compromise, these are When you talk about fairness, these are universal values. One does not need really to have a PhD in political science to understand that that is democracy. Is it possible that perhaps we should move away from the semantics of using democracy and probably talk about social, economic, political justice for all?
I think that the two items are not mutually exclusive. I think you can't talk about economic and social justice for all without talking about democracy, and neither can you talk about democracy without talking about economic justice for all. So I think it's very important to reemphasize democracy as a conduit to have some of these social and economic enfranchisements within any society. And in relation to what my colleague Chipu had mentioned, this is very true. There has been significant growth and support in terms of expanding the democratic space, and also significant economic growth generally on the continent. It's the region, I believe, before COVID, Africa was the region expanding at the fastest rate globally from year to year until COVID hit, of course. But then we have now come into a certain space, Shaka, where, for example, with COVID-19, a lot of these authoritarian regimes have used COVID-19 as a pretext to clamp down on the opposition, on political gatherings, on the activities of civil societies, and also in the context of the elections in Guinea, in Ivory Coast, and in Tanzania. We saw the government restricting or clamping down on opposition rallies due to COVID, but a lot of the government rallies were being allowed. So there's this duality in terms of favoritism. And then the other element, Shaka, we also need to be thinking about when we're thinking of democracy in the continent and how it then can advance socioeconomic growth is this idea of the individual context of each country. I think we should remember in Tanzania, they had this very unique case where Zanzibar, which is actually a federated union with Tanganyika to form Tanzania, feels very marginalized. From the past election to this election, there's been an inconclusive element of a referendum. The central government in Dodoma has refused to allow the people of Zanzibar to have a plebiscite to decide whether they want to be part of the union or whether they do not. And then secondly, is the other very challenging issue with democratization that Chipu had alluded to in the context of Tanzania. Because here you see essentially a one-party authoritarian regime where it really seems that since the days of Nyerere till 2020, till today, the Chama cha Mapinduzi is entrenched not only in the civil society within the political space, but also within the military. And it's almost impossible to see a scenario where should Magufuli decide he wants to leave and the next candidate is picked or selected and presented to the electorate, you find it very difficult to see how the opposition would in any way be able to challenge this individual. And then thinking also about Guinea, thinking about the Ivory Coast. The irony with the Ivory Coast is that Alassane Ouattara had lived in the United States for many years. He knows how democracies work with the Bretton Woods institutions for many years.
And has a PhD to boot, by the way, from the University of Pennsylvania, an Ivy League.
Correct. So he was with the IMF for many years. And a lot of what he's learned in the West, his democratic values that you'd assume he learned from University of Pennsylvania, are just not being articulated on the ground. So I am again, very concerned. I'm not skeptical, but I guess I'm more concerned about the future for democracy on the continent in terms of Alpha Conde in Guinea, in terms of, Ouattara in the Ivory Coast, and also in terms of Magufuli. I really feel we need to start creating a space, as Chipu had mentioned, within civic society to have an alternative to some of these leaders. Because if you look at the context of those three countries we've talked about, and even a lot of other African countries more broadly, the players in the political game almost inevitably seem to be the same individuals year in, year out. There's no turnover. Magufuli has been years in the CCM. You think of Mnangagwa with ZANU-PF. You think of Alpha Conde in Guinea. You think of Ouattara with the era of the Hufe Boigny's. Where is the new generation? And when we have this election, Shaka, we keep regurgitating the same old leaders. We don't really offer new faces, whether it's in the opposition or even in government. It seems like we keep rehashing the same old faces, whether in opposition or in government. And I think that's also something, in addition to the context of the country, that we need to be thinking about. How do we get more new faces, more young people, more new ideas that are outside of the ruling party or of some of the dominant opposition players?
And, you know, can I just jump in there, David, because you mentioned something about Tanzania that I've been thinking quite a bit about. When I was doing my my PhD research back in 2013, I spent quite some time in Arusha. And for me, one of the first things that jumped out to me is that Arusha at the time was governed locally by the opposition. And the mayor was from the opposition party. And, you know, so him and I, we would drive around. And he would mention that the CCM, they had their biggest hold in all of these rural areas. And back then, it was under President Kikwete. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was very exciting, although I think Magufuli has slowly done away with that, is that the opposition had come up with a strategy to begin to get into local elections. So I think that sometimes the issue with African politics, right, is that the focus is always national. Even when I think about people like, you know, Alison, who's gone back to run for office in Ivory Coast, when I think about the president who got into Gambia, the guy from who was in the UK, I forget, the current Gambian president, I'm forgetting his name, which I blame on being a new mom. We have a newborn, and I feel like, you know, since having her, my brain is all over the place. But so one of the things that struck me with all of these people is, why aren't they starting off at the local level? Because that's where the challenge is, really, right? We talk about, well, where's the young leadership? And I think you've got these people that are really wonderful, but they seem to just fly in and want to start at the top. So, and they're not assisting in building grassroots level from the bottom going up. So I think it's really important for anybody who seeks to be president to start at the local level and to build a very strong grassroots movement that's focused on the councils, that's focused on the provincial elections, the municipality elections. Because if they do that, and that's one thing that, you know, Morgan Tsvangirai had done very well, but, you know, the story ends very differently with this passing on. But I think what the MDC had done in Zimbabwe was to infiltrate ZANU-PF strongholds at the local level. And even if the ruling party keeps winning at the national level, in some cases, you get good policies because you have enough opposition parliamentarians in government.
As I often say, time is not our best ally. We'll go for a short break, and when we return, we'll continue with the discussion. So please don't go away.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa. And today we are discussing the elections in the Ivory Coast, Tanzania, and Guinea. And my distinguished guests are Chipo Dendere, Assistant Professor for Africana Studies at Wellesley College in Massachusetts, and David Monda, Professor at the City University of New York. Talked about Tanzania. I also did part of my PhD dissertation for UCLA research in Tanzania. 1985. I spent 6 months at the Kiokiku, University of Dar es Salaam, and